pick their district, Congressman Frank Lucas, joining us this morning off the heels of a re-election that he won 70, 78, 79% in the Big Third District. Again, overwhelmingly, Congressman Lucas, good morning.
Hello, my neighbors were kind to me one more time. And by the way, you forgot, isn't this Statehood Day?
It is, yes.
Years ago we joined the union?
Yes, we talked about that earlier this morning, absolutely.
Good.
The state of Oklahoma. 79%, why do folks in Big Third District continue to support you overwhelmingly like this?
Well, when you're in an ag and energy district, small towns, small cities, when you've got lots of good folks who are basically pretty conservative, who want to be left alone, who want the Constitution to honor, be honored, and want the tax man to take his or her hand out of their pocket, when you got those kind of good people, if you go to the nation's capital and you vote that away, they respond. Remember, in rural America, voters pay attention. One of the big problems that we've always faced in this country is in the suburban and the inner city areas, where people don't pay attention like they do out in the countryside. That's why country members of Congress tend to be more of a reflection of their constituency. So there, I think I work hard to represent my people, and I have people who actually pay attention.
So what term is this for you? How many times have you been reelected?
Well, I was elected in May of 1994 in a special election. So I suppose in the way they do the term stuff, this might be, counting the peace term, something like 12, maybe, yeah.
So let me ask you this just real quick, and then we'll talk about some serious stuff, but a couple of things. Number one, Barbara Boxer is going to try to run a bill to blow up the Electoral College. They don't like this because I guess folks in the middle of the country are, I guess maybe kind of unfairly represented because we don't have the population, but if you do away with it, we are absolutely not represented. And number two, President-elect Trump has talked about term limits, which would obviously affect our representatives out here, being you and Inhofe as well, who has been there for quite some time. So do you have opinions on either one of those?
Opinions about both. Let's talk first about the Electoral College. The system was set up at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 and 1788. The founding fathers at the time, we're talking George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, James Madison, some really bright people, decided there needed to be, I think, a safety valve, a cushion between the direct election process and the actual election of presidents. Remember, in those days, you voted. It took days to tally it up. It took weeks, then sometimes by horseback, to get the information to the state capitol. Then it took more weeks to get the votes results from the state capitol into the national capitol. So that's the constitutional perspective. The practical political perspective is, if you simply go by the direct vote, tally up all both sides of the sheet of the paper, and whoever got the most, if you live west of the Mississippi River, maybe west of the Appalachian Mountains, if you live east of the California state line, if you live outside of the city of Chicago, they'll never come see us because they'll run up the vote in New York City and Chicago and Miami and Los Angeles and San Francisco, and they'll put every energy they have into where all the big blocks of votes are, and they'll never come to Oklahoma. They'll never come to Kansas. They won't give a hoot what happens in Nebraska or the Dakotas. This is how we force presidential campaigns to pay attention to all of us who don't live in New York or Chicago or Los Angeles. If you want California, yes, to a degree, Texas, Illinois, New York, to pick your president without any input from the rest of us, then do away with the Electoral College. But I happen to believe there's more to life than the concrete jungles of the three or four biggest cities in America. So I'm sure the Democrats are furious, but they made the decision about how to spend their campaign time. They made the decision that blue-collar voters who made Donald Trump the president of the United States would automatically rubber stamp the Democratic line without any question, and they were wrong, and they paid a price for it, and that's okay. Whether you believe Mr. Richard, former President Nixon's term about the silent majority, or my late father's term about real people, This time, the real people, the silent majority, picked the president. And that would not have happened if we'd not had the Electoral College system, the term limit question. I have, since the day I came to Congress, been a believer in term limits. But here's the issue. If you're going to pass constitutional term limits so that every congressman and every senator in every state, big or little, plays by the same rules, I'm with you. I happen to think the 12 and 12 combination is the way to go. 12 years in the House and or 12 years in the Senate. But the movement that a lot of people push, and some in Oklahoma, about, well, let's set the standard, let's term limit ourselves, no matter what anybody else does. You take a little state like Oklahoma, and if we turn over members on a regular basis, and once again, the Texans or the Californians or anybody else doesn't play by that standard, then you disadvantage us. You disadvantage us at home, and I'm not going to do that to my constituents.
Yeah, I hear you.
Term limits, constitutionally, same standard, I'm in favor. But cutting our own wrists at home politically, I'm not in favor of that.
Talk to us a little bit about the next couple of months, the lame duck session that's coming up. Do you what are you hearing? What's going to be accomplished, or is anything going to be accomplished, or we're kind of hoping nothing's going to be accomplished? Or
for our listeners' benefit, the old Congress is still in place until the first Monday in January, and that's when the new Congress that was elected last Tuesday is sworn in. I would expect in lame duck, we'll be here long enough to prevent President Obama from doing recess appointments. We'll be here long enough to fight any last-minute rulemaking processes. But we'll do the appropriation bills. We'll fund the federal government. We'll address a few other issues, but don't expect a lot of legislative stuff. What we have been told, though, is that when we swear in on the first Monday in January, now President-elect Trump does not take office till, what, the 20th, 21st. So there's basically 3 weeks between the time the new Congress sets and before the new president sets. We have been told to be here 5 days a week, every week, working as aggressively as we can on everything from Obama repeal to fixing Dodd-Frank to addressing border security, all these sort of things. We've been told to be here every day, every business day, because we're going to try to have things ready to put on his desk starting the day he's sworn in, and especially over the first month, 2 months, 3 months, to have as much stuff ready to go as possible. Now, the administration has a lot of work to do because in addition to preparing to nominate a new candidate for the Supreme Court when he takes office in January, because we've got a vacancy, remember, he also has better than 4,000 political appointments to fill. Yes, that's 4,000 Obama people who will be out of work the day little President-elect Trump is sworn in. They've got to get all that done. 1,000 of them require senatorial confirmation. They've got to work through all that. So it's really busy. If you're in the administration, you're trying to put an administration together. If you're in the United States House, you're trying to protect us from Barack Obama until he leaves office. And then you're in the process of trying to get as much stuff ready to go as possible for when President Trump takes over. So, madhouse for the next, basically 120 days.
So, after Trump is... let me ask you this real quick. How surprised were you backing Trump in this race, and how surprised were you, or were you surprised that he actually pulled it off?
Well, number one, I didn't support anybody in the primary process. I could never get excited about anybody. But ultimately, when Mr. Trump was picked to be the party nominee, yeah, I was on his side, because it was either Donald Trump or a third term of Barack Obama in the name of Hillary Clinton. I come from a district that's oil and gas. It's agriculture. It's Main Street. It's conservative folks, both on economic and social issues. I couldn't handle a third term of Barack Obama. And by the way, that's ultimately what beat Hillary, I think, was when Obama spent more time campaigning for her than I've ever seen an incumbent president campaign for a successor in my memory, in my lifetime. It became not just, are we voting for the new guy? It became a referendum on the incumbent, and Hillary was in effect the incumbent. And you and I have discussed before in the past, you don't beat an incumbent, they lose. And Barack and Hillary together lost this third term. So, yes, I'm ready for the new adventures and challenges. any of our listeners who stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning with me on election night knows that the national media folks and the pundits and the experts and the gurus were absolutely convinced that Trump couldn't win. And at about 11 o'clock that night, they started getting funny looks on their faces and a funny tone to their voice. And at approximately 2:15, where I was watching in Oklahoma, when Hillary conceded the election, it still took the national media 45 more minutes to acknowledge she had lost, even after she admitted she'd lost.
Yeah, it was a full-on...
That's the height of arrogance. I stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning just to enjoy the beautiful people, the experts, being wrong.
It was a complete meltdown. First 100 days... enact middle-class tax cuts, institute tariffs on companies' offshore jobs, eliminate Common Core education standards, repeal and replace Affordable Care Act, enact his proposals on child care, tackle illegal immigration, beef up federal law enforcement agencies, reduce crime, drugs, violence, support the military, and eliminate the defense sequester. How much of that actually gets done? I mean, it all sounds good, but how much of it actually gets done in the first 100 days or in the first year or two?
Honestly, I can't answer that question because it depends on how the Democrats act in the United States Senate. Remember, even though we still have a big majority in the House, the Republicans lost two seats, so it's 52-48. They still have to have eight Democrats vote with them to get the 60 votes, the supermajority, to cut off the unlimited debate to move forward. Now, we're working hard on a procedure called budget reconciliation, which is typically once a year, but in the way the calendar works this time, it could be twice a year thing, where you can use simple majorities in both the House and Senate, not 60 votes, but 51 votes in the Senate, to reduce spending. And budget reconciliation may well be the vehicle with which we repeal Obamacare. Now, this is an example where we got to have patience out there in the country. Remember, there are literally millions and millions of people who, under Obamacare, lost their insurance because they were forced to go to Obamacare, and the insurance they had before most likely doesn't exist anymore. So what I would guess, and I'm not on the committees of jurisdiction, I'm speculating, is you'll see a bill that will repeal Obamacare in its entirety. We'll probably use budget reconciliation to slam it through and get it signed, but it will set a date 6 months, 9 months down the road for the enactment. So then we'll have time to come back and figure out how do you make sure those people who, through no fault of their own, lost their insurance because they were forced to go to Obamacare, and when Obamacare goes away, they've got to have some option for insurance. We'll have to figure out how to protect them from being hurt before the Obamacare kicks in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You can't. Yeah, you can't just boot them off and leave them out in the cold. You got to transition.
Keeping your kids on till they're 25.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pre-existing condition stuff that's extremely popular, but those all cost money. So how do you keep those options? It's going to be tough, but as I said, I expect a complete repeal, but the repeal date will be far enough down the road to give us time to figure out how to keep people from getting hurt. Because you should not be hurt because Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid took away your insurance and gave you worse insurance. You should not be hurt by the repealing of their mistake suddenly to not have anything, no protection. So those are the kind of issues we've got to work through.
Let me ask you one more question, Congressman Lucas, and I'll turn you loose. Through this whole campaign cycle on a national level, there really wasn't a whole lot of talk about agriculture that I can really remember. What kind of a role... Or are you hearing? Are you going to be able to play in agriculture? How much emphasis is there in agriculture on the new administration? I'm assuming there are going to be a lot of regulations that are going to be rolled back, EPA regulations or whatever that will.
USA rule. There's all those kind of things. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know that I've timed out as chairman of the Ag Committee. I remain a member of the Ag Committee. I will always be a member of the Ag Committee as long as my neighbors will let me be a member of Congress. So I've kind of adopted the senior statesman role on the committee. The farm bill, because it was so hard and complicated to implement last time, you know, actually it expires in September of 2018. So in the Ag Committee, we will begin this spring with a look at what's worked and didn't work in the old farm bill and begin to try to figure out what changes that have to be made or appropriate for the 2018 farm bill. We'll have a brand new secretary of ag, and I've seen a list of, oh my goodness, sometimes anywhere from 10 to 40 names. Most of those folks that I've seen had no involvement with the previous farm bill process, have no experience in how it was put together, but that's okay. But I do believe that President-elect Trump is a practical enough fella to understand that it wasn't the elite on both sides of the political spectrum. It wasn't the richest of the folks at the top of the pile who made him president. And farm bills are about people who are turning the soil over, people who are raising livestock, and yes, from school lunch on down, the folks who benefit from this affordable, high-quality food supply. So I have a feeling that he will probably be a little easier in some ways to deal with on these issues than some of his predecessors. He may not know any more about ag than Obama did, but at least I think he understands the folks out in the heartland where we farm made him president.
Big 3rd District Congressman. Yes, sir. Big 3rd District Congressman Frank Lucas again just reelected. About 78% across the Big 3rd District. Hey, Congressman, we got to get back on our once-a-month schedule, man. I got to hear from you.
There's going to be so much fun stuff going on over this next couple of years. It'll be a lively conversation every time.
I appreciate the opportunity, man. Thanks, and congratulations once again for your reelection.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Big 3rd District Congressman Frank Lucas.